Welcome, everybody. It's Mark Steiner right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of community. Of note is an incredible magazine. It features the work of artists from across the globe with a focus where art meets activism. It's the voice so many times, especially this issue of women. This issue is called the burqa issue. And it just examines this very complicated place for women who wear the burqa, what the burqa means, the complexities, the art that talks about it, what life means within it and around it. And one of our incredible people, Grace Ali, is the executive director and founder of Ofnote, one of the first online magazines that focuses on global artists from around the globe. She's a faculty member at the Department of Interdisciplinary Arts and Sciences at the City College of New York, and has won the Outstanding Faculty of the Year Award in 2014. And Grace has invited along with her Maria Magsi, who is a Toronto-based photographer, who created the cover photo of this issue of Note, which you can just click on right now and look at as you're listening to us. She was born and raised in Karachi, Pakistan. Erin Haney is a writer and art historian who teaches here in Maryland and in D.C. And she wrote the piece on Maria Magsi in of Note, and co-founded and directs Resolution, an organization focused on expanding access to photography and archives in Africa. And Manaz Reze is a digital curator and filmmaker who was born in Western Afghanistan and is now based in D.C., Virginia. And she's a writer for the Afghan Women's Project and now mentors online diary workshops for women in Afghanistan who do not speak or write English. And ladies, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you so much, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to meet you all
this
way.
Thank you, Mark.
I wish it was in person. I just really have enjoyed the work so much. I'm just very taken by it. So taken, I've sent it to all my daughters and my friends. You've got to look at this.
Fantastic. Girl power.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So I wanted to, Grace, let me just start. Just very quickly, for our listeners, the background of Note, why and how it started, and then I want to get into the heart of why the burqa issue, which I know is a struggle to think about doing.
Well, you know, I have very mixed feelings about the burqa. It's haunted me, and I'm still on the fence about it. And I think there are a lot of people like me out there that, you know, we think of ourselves as evolved and forward-thinking, and yet we still have these sort of hiccups about things like the burqa. And I really did this issue, to be honest, for myself, to really bring a group of women together to unpack something that I found becoming increasingly controversial and symbolic and so far removed from its original intention. So, you know, doing this issue and listening to these women's voices was first and foremost an educational experience for me. I learned so much. And I think it really speaks to the mission of the magazine. We want to take these things. We want to take these experiences and deconstruct them and parse them out and get our readers to really think about them in ways that they've never thought about these kinds of things before.
And I think that's part of, and you're doing that. And I think that, you know, I you raised some stuff here, all of you did in the pieces you're doing. And I was thinking, in particular, I think it was in Mariam, in your piece, the photos you were doing, where you made this incredible distinction about art and real life and the burqa. And in this line that we just don't understand, that I think that what you're doing with this art is kind of helping us, and maybe you could help us here a little bit, with the complexity of what all this is, the complexity of the burqa. So it's not kind of this simplistic analysis that we throw on it here in the West.
So I absolutely agree with you, Mark. This is a very complex and complicated issue. I was born and raised in Pakistan. I haven't seen my family members or extended family members wear the burqa. At most, they veil themselves with a loose hijab or a dupatta, which is a piece of cloth you can use to cover your body and be a little modest. So the burqa, you know, in its entirety, has a sort of foreign feel to me, even being from Pakistan, where we're now seeing it quite a bit in certain rural areas, in certain socioeconomic, in people from certain socioeconomic backgrounds. And what I find so interesting about it as I go about my journey with the burqa is I began to meet people from Saudi Arabia, Iran, Pakistan, who, for example, may identify with being queer Muslims. And they can't really be out in their societies or to their families. So they'll cross-dress and use burqas or chadars or niqabs to, practice, for example, same-sex love or be able to go out to parties and socialize in places that are very policed and where these actions are considered very deviant and in some cases punishable by death. So suddenly the same cloth that has been so oppressive and so controversial is now being used by certain subcultures almost as a form of liberation. And it's as if that's the only way they could use it to be free in their identities, yet masked and hidden also to protect themselves. So, you know, sexuality, conservatism, exposed, covered. I mean, I'm seeing all these dualities, and that's what I'm trying to explore, at least with my photography.
And the piece of this I think that is so compelling and confusing for many people when they look at it is this whole question of freedom, mm-hmm. and what freedom means. Freedom to dress, freedom to the debates around modesty. I mean, this whole question is so confusing. But what for me, I think it's important for us to explore here for a moment. This is not just confusing for us mm-hmm. in the West, but it's also confusing in many ways for a lot of women in Afghanistan, in Iran,
Absolutely.
In
Absolutely.
Saudi Arabia, in anywhere. Who'd like to jump in, Mariam?
I think Manaz can also speak to that because she's also the digital curator of the issue and
right.
wrote a beautiful, beautiful curatorial statement about how as a young girl she was introduced to the burqa.
Right.
So I think Manaz, you should jump in.
Please.
Yeah, I would say freedom is different for every person. Sometimes Afghan women who are in Afghanistan, they wear burqa. If you tell them don't wear burqa, they feel that you are taking their freedom because they grow up with the culture of wearing burqa. And for some of them, it's very normal. It's their own. They find freedom under burqa. So if you tell them you shouldn't wear burqa, they feel that you are oppressing them. So freedom for every person in every situation, it takes a different meaning. And people in the West, they may think that taking burqa from someone is like freeing them. But for someone in Afghanistan, it might not be. And the meaning of freedom for them can be different than what we imagine for them will be good.
I mean, you have these poems in here by women from the Afghan Women's Writers Project. And
yes.
They're very powerful because, I mean, when I read what you wrote about, you know, going back between Afghanistan and Iran and the complexities mm-hmm. of the two societies, which we can talk about in a bit.
Yeah.
But so many of the women here writing that I've read from the Afghan Women's Project, even though it's what they're expected to do when they grew up in, so they do it, as you wrote about, you know, if you grow up with lipstick and short skirts, then that's what you're going to want to be when you grow up as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
But you also feel that in every one of these women who write about this, it's almost like they're feeling trapped.
So yeah, because I believe all burqa is limiting. When you are wearing a burqa, you can't drive. When you are wearing a burqa, you can argue with a man face to face. They can see your emotions. They
right.
can see, they can make eye contact with you. So burqa is limiting for many of these girls. They are thinking to be in their society and work and be active and run around like a lot of activities that they think burqa is limiting them. So while for like older generation, like older women who are uneducated and at home, wearing burqa is something normal. For the new generation, burqa is very limiting.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead. So was somebody about to jump in? I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, Mehnaz, that's actually a very, very interesting point you're bringing up, because I've worn the niqab and the burqa, you know, albeit for very short periods of time. I recognize my privilege that I can remove it whenever I want. And it's been for social experiments and performance art pieces. And it is a very disabling feeling under there. You really can't see very well. And walking is not easy either. So you're absolutely right. It is very limiting. Yet at the same time, I come across Muslim feminists who argue that, you know, you stop being a sexual object for men once you wear a niqab or a burqa. And they see a sort of liberty and feminism in that. And I would be interested to know what you think about that.
Yeah, actually, I also wore niqab when I was in Iran, because I grew up in a very religious environment. Mm-hmm. The school I went to, they were also very religious. So the whole idea of like wearing niqab or like wearing a veil is to cover yourself for modesty, so you don't evoke like other like men to come and talk to you or do something wrong. So I thought maybe that's the point. Maybe I should be wearing niqab. And I started wearing niqab. And I noticed that even wearing niqab, men were catcalling to me. And they were saying, I remember one of them told me, you're only bringing out your most beautiful part, which is your eyes.
Mm.
You bring those out to showcase to people. Or another one was telling me, oh, you are the mother of Zorro, making fun. So there were a lot of things. And later on, I noticed, no, this is not making sense. If you're wearing a hijab and still people are making fun of you or catcalling, it's not your problem. Then it's their problem. They need to correct themselves.
I did an interview a couple of months back with this lady who washes clothes for a bunch of families in our neighborhood in Karachi, Pakistan. And around 6:30 p.m. when it would be time for her to go home, and she lived, you know, quite far from the city, she would put on her entire burqa, all these veils, and, you know, she'd wrap herself up and then leave the suburbs. And so one day, you know, I sat down with her and just asking her, is it beneficial when you wear this? Do people not harass you? Do you find it easier to go home? And, you know, she looked at me with these bewildered eyes and she said, oh, I get harassed constantly at the bus stops. This doesn't stop anything. She said, it just makes me feel like I'm a little safer. But she's like, oh, don't think that the harassment doesn't stop. It's definitely very much there, whether we're covered or not.
And yeah.
I'm really interested, you know, by that, because it's supposed to be there to cover your modesty, you know, to not attract any unwanted stares, attention, harassment. Yet in many of our societies like Pakistan, Iran, it doesn't really seem to be helping any of the women.
Yeah, that's true. And I feel this is like a human nature that men and women, they would like to like communicate with each other, know each other. Whether you want it or not, the sexual tension is always between female and male. And if you're restricting like women from talking to men or like not allowing them to communicate with men, still, this sexual tension exists, and men find their way to like talk with women and even like harass them. If we look at the data that come out of Eastern countries, that women are covered, there are more harassment happening there than countries like Western countries who women have. Like freedom of whatever freedom in wearing whatever they want. So even like I knew my cousins, they wore burqa during Taliban, and they were saying that they always get harassed, and they're always people who follow them, men who follow them and catcall them. And even they were telling me that men, they know who is under burqa, if it's a girl or if it's a woman, by the way they are walking.
Mm-hmm. Mark, I wanted to see if I can... Hi, it's Grace. I wanted to see if I can bring in Aaron.
Yeah, I was about to do that. But
because one of the things that we did on the editorial side of the issue is really, first of all, think strategically and make a decision that this issue was going to be an all-women's issue, first of all. You know, this idea that women are going to speak for women is not just a hashtag. It was really important for us because a lot of the conversations about women in burqas are not being had, A, by women, and B, by the women actually wearing the burqas. So that was a really, really important priority for this project. And the second priority, too, was to throw people together that actually were on opposite ends of the thing. So we wanted to ask our women in the West, you know, our Western women, to interview and talk with these artists about something that they too knew very little about, and see what happened, what came out of that conversation, what came out of that relationship. And I think the conversation between Miriam and Aaron is a prime example. Aaron came at it from a perspective of being an art historian, but also from an American woman in the West. And I'd really love to hear how she sort of embraced my throwing her this assignment.
No, that's exactly what I was going to go to. I didn't know about that part. I was about to ask Aaron that as well, as an American woman who had to get into all of this.
Right.
So, yeah, please do go ahead, Aaron.
No, I mean, it was a pleasure to have such great conversations with Mariam and to see her images. That was really the first introduction, and then I got to sort of speak with her later. And I guess in my work in general, I'm really have always been interested in trying to talk with artists who are not primarily based in the West and who have very, very different perspectives to offer, and I am always curious about that. But in regards to Mariam's work especially, it was just so strongly clear that she wasn't ambiguous about it. She wasn't sitting on the fence about that, but she was really interested in using it as a metaphor, the burqa as a metaphor and a way of thinking about the possibilities, really, and the mystery that comes across in the images that she has. Were really intriguing to me, and I think through our conversation, you know, she demonstrated amply, and you can see that on the Of Note site that she has been thinking about this for quite a long time. She comes about it. She comes from a very educated place, and she's had a lot of conversations in a lot of different parts of the world. So it's not a regional or a provincial sort of conversation at all. And I think that, you know, from the point of view of having all of these artists there in Of Note, we have a sense of the geographic sort of spread and territory and the question that there's no sort of absolute, sense of belonging, like, you know, that certain people will belong or sort of, you know, adhere to a certain set of practices, but really the set of individual choices that are happening. And, you know, the other thing that I quite was intrigued with by Mariam's response was that idea of her being one way in one part of the world with her family in Pakistan, and then the sort of possibilities that were available to her in Canada, you know, as an artist working there in Toronto and certainly a widely recognized around the globe sort of photographer and artist that she is now, you know, she's allowed to have conversations with artists and people who are wearing burqas and hijab and niqab all over the Middle East, you know, in Europe, in North America. And I really liked that clarity that she had of the senses of individual choice that were possible in certain places and were not possible in others. And so that really opened up, it was a great introduction and a sort of like opening for the kind of conversation that I feel like we were able to have.
Now, I thought that, Mariam, your photographs and what Aaron was just saying, they're very challenging. I mean, they're beautiful. The women in the burqas, especially the burgundy burqa, the red burqa, is a kind of very powerful symbol of what they mean. But then the ones in your streets, the ones in the streets, in the alleys especially, with women's legs showing and the burqas on top, they're challenging the whole notion of what this means. It's like something was in somehow this artwork is like the burqa walking between two worlds.
Human beings are sexual beings, and I mean, you know, these women wearing the burqas are also getting married and having children and reproducing, and you know, there's that whole element to it, which I sort of like to explore. But even, you know, with sexuality and sensuality, it's very much there under all of these garments, but it's very tough to bring it out because of the controversial nature of the garment itself. But the reason I challenge it is in my Islamic studies and research recently, I'm doing my master's at OCAD University, and it's all about burqa, veiling, what it's like to be Muslim post 9/11. Do Muslim women really even need saving? Where is this narrative coming from? The aspects that speak out to me most are, again, the dualities. Inside these covers are naked bodies. And I'm trying to sort of play with that and challenge the viewer a little bit to not just see it as one singular narrative of, you know, just purely oppression, but try to maybe look beyond that too.
So we're going to take a short break and come right back. And I want to tackle those two things, and we'll have this beautiful poem that can be read before Manaz has to leave us, and to explore this in greater depth. And I would encourage all of our listeners, while you're listening, go to the website, and you want to check out Of Note. It's just ofnotemagazine.org, and it's just well worth a look as we're talking. Stay with us. We'll be right back as we explore the burqa through Of Note. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to testing, you can learn more about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's MarylandEducators.org. Or at SteinerShow.org is Maryland State Education Association's banner. Welcome back. Good to have you all with us. We are continuing our conversation with Of Note. The magazine created by Grace Ali, editorial director and founder of Of Note, and an online magazine that brings artists to daily from throughout the globe, wrestling with art and activism and social change. She's a faculty member of the Department of Interdisciplinary in Arts and Sciences at CUNY, the City College of New York. And three of the people who worked on this issue with her are with us. The woman who curated the issue is Manaz Razeh, who is a digital curator and filmmaker, born in Western Afghanistan, also lived in Iran, now based in D.C., Virginia, and is a writer for the Afghan Women's Writers Project, doing some incredible work there. Maria Moxie is also featured here, Toronto-based photographer who created the cover photo for this issue of Note, born and raised in Karachi. And Aaron Haney, who is a writer and art historian, teaches in the Maryland, D.C. area, wrote a piece on Mariam for Note, and co-founded and co-directs Resolution, an organization focused on expanding access to photography and archives in Africa. So I just coming back to this, and I just, Grace, let me come back to you right away, and then before we go back to the poem, and just you said at the very top of all this that you really had to wrestle with, A, do I want to do this issue, and B, what you got from the content of the work of the women around you.
Right. Well, you know, I had my first real encounter with women in burqas being the norm, not the anomaly, when I lived in India in a city called Hyderabad. I was there for a Fulbright fellowship.
Oh, yeah.
And Hyderabad is a predominantly Muslim city, so women walking around in burqas is not something anyone bats an eye at. But I was so disrupted by it because, you know, I showed up in India as a 20-something-year-old with all of my Western intellectualisms and feminisms, and I had very strong feelings about how invisible the burqa made women. And I got to know a woman that wore a burqa, and, you know, we developed a friendship. And essentially, you know, our relationship came to a point where she asked me to question something like, you know, her body, she felt, was for herself, for her husband, and for her children. And that's why she wore the burqa. And I think what she was saying in that in that philosophy was, not only am I choosing who my body is for, but I'm also choosing who it's not for. And she was ultimately saying, my body is not for public consumption. And regardless of how you feel, I think that there's so much value in that. I think there's a lot of value in saying, I'm going to choose who my body is for, and my body is not for public consumption. And so, but you know, I still have my feelings about the burqa. I'm still on the fence about it. I really wanted to do an issue on it because I think it's become this incredible symbol of how we other people, how we alienate people because of what they're wearing. When we were coming down to the wire about releasing the issue and making it live, the attacks in Paris happened. Then later, a couple of weeks later, the attacks in San Bernardino happened. Then Donald Trump happened. And so,
right.
You know, I'm going to be very personal with you. My mother has been in the process of what I'm doing. My mother asked me not to put this issue out. She
really?
Was scared. Yes, she thought that an audience wouldn't understand what we were trying to do because it might be couched and framed in this current vitriolic rhetoric our country is now embroiled in about Islam. And, you know, I said, Mom, I think we have to trust our audience on this one. And I think because it's such a difficult time in our country's history, that's why we should put this issue out. And we did, and we're still kind of fielding the responses. The responses have mostly been your kind of responses, Mark. This kind of, we're both challenged and impressed, but we're also very disrupted by the challenges in the issue and the challenge to the way we think. But for the most part, I think the issue and the artist's work, it's doing what we intended to do, which is not to be prescriptive, which is not to say you should feel X way about the burqa or you should feel Y way about the burqa, but to really pay attention to the experiences and the words and the emotions and the thoughts of the women that have actually worn this garment. That is what we want people to stay with and get to.
One of the things before Manaj, you read the poem, before you have to leave, that struck me, what you just said and what I felt in the issue was, A, I could see people looking at this issue, that many of the people I'm talking about probably wouldn't even read of note, but they might, look at this issue and get very offended by the conversation, saying, why we shouldn't even be having this conversation. This is not important to us about the burqa. On the other hand, I could see people in who are more fundamentalist in their view of Islam taking huge offense at this issue and just how the burqa is portrayed.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, I mean, this is like it challenges notions from one end to the other.
I think people who wore burqa, who lived among that women who wore burqa, they have the right to express their ideas.
Yes.
And this is what we give. This is what issue is about, is giving voice to those women who actually wore burqa, or their mothers or their women in their families were affected by burqa. So even though there exist people outside who may see this issue and get offended by that, we can change people's opinion. We can just put out our opinion out there. And if there might be some people who get offended, but there are some people who understand. And we are hopeful that this issue make people to think, because the burqa issue is a complex issue and it needs to be discussed. There needs to be a lot of conversation about it so that people think about it and understand some aspects of it.
I would also like to add here that the burqa has no prevalence in the Quran. It's not an Islamic construct, and a lot of people don't seem to be aware of this. In my research, the Quranic line that keeps coming up for women is guard your modesty. I don't know how this has been interpreted differently in various parts of the world, but it's the one line I keep coming across, guard your modesty, guard your modesty. I haven't seen descriptions of the burqa in the Quran.
Right.
I have a problem with it being state imposed. I have an issue with it being imposed by your spouses, your families. When it's choice based, I mean, I laud those women for, you know, walking around in Toronto, resisting all the stereotypes, continuing to wear it if they're doing it by choice. There's a huge difference between being coerced into it and it being imposed on you and actually doing it by choice.
And I think that's an important point, because I think that what's clear, and it was in one of the pieces in the magazine, that the niqab or the burqa is not mentioned at all in the Quran. Just the requirement for rightful conduct and modesty, which could be interpreted in many ways. So then what becomes, even if you grow up in a society where the burqa is the norm, forced or otherwise, what about the history of the burqa in terms of why it's there, why it's worn, where it came from, if it's not in the Quran? You know, because you can look at, because headscarves, there are Christian cultures where women wear headscarves. There are, right, in the Orthodox Jewish culture, women wear headscarves. In Islam, women wear headscarves. Mm-hmm. So where does this come from? What's the root of it?
That's sort of what I try to do with my art and photography, right, is I'm not challenging Islam here. I'm challenging patriarchy.
Exactly. Right. So you're saying this is something in terms of where the burqa comes from. It's not about Islam. It's beyond Islam. It's about the depth of patriarchy in our world.
Absolutely. And, you know, it goes both ways, because I see the same patriarchy in the over-sexualization of the female form in the West.
Right. Right. That's an interesting balance.
And editorially too, Mark, if you look at the articles in the issue, if you look at the sort of editor's note and Manaz's curatorial statement, we don't engage the burqa via the lens of Islam. We
right.
do very little of that. And we were very clear about how do we extract the burqa from conversations about Islam. That's not what the issue is about. The issue is not about marrying the burqa with Islam at all. It's about thinking of this garment, this aesthetically stunning garment, as you see through Miriam's work and Manaz's photographs and her poem. How do we think of it as a symbol? And what does that symbol represent? But there's very little in the issue that directly connects the burqa and our reading of it and our parsing it out to Islam.
And that's important. And the notion that just came up a moment ago is a very powerful one that I think that deserves real exploration, which is the polar ends here of patriarchy in our world. I often say in different programs that when we wrestle with racism in the world, that racism in the world is like 600 years old. And now permeates the marrow of not just the West, but the entire planet. But misogyny is as old as humankind. And if racism permeates us that deeply, what about misogyny and patriarchy? How deep that really is. And so those two poles you just said, I think Manaj just said, are the burqa on the one side and the way we frequently use and misuse women's bodies and images in the West on the other side. And that's a very powerful notion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Yeah, there is different theories about the history of burqa and where burqa comes from. Some people say in Afghanistan, like burqa came when British came to Afghanistan and then they brought burqa.
Hmm.
And some other people say it started when Prophet Muhammad wives started wearing burqa to separate themselves from the other like women, and there are all these different notions about the history of burqa. But overall, we should think and see that even in all the religions, there are women who sort of like they are told to be modest and wear modest clothing. Even in Christianity, we have nuns who cover themselves. So it's not very clear that when it exactly started, but it is something that exists and need to be discussed in terms of like how we should be with people who like wear it. We can have our own ideas, but we should also be tolerant and respectful to those who choose to wear burqa.
Manas, before you have to go, would you mind reading your poem?
Yes, sure. So the title of my poem is Deep in Blue, and I wrote it to explain about this beautiful garment and how the meaning of burqa change when the usage of it changes. So deep in blue. It's prominent color blue, the favorite color of many, like a deep blue ocean, a breathtaking spot where you wish to dive and take peace. Its embroidery is magnificent, beautiful silk threads, handsomely choreographed, smartly patterned, creating a seductive dance in circle, triangle, and flower-shaped. On a land of crepe, a shiny, crisp field, with long, even pleats, formed into little mountains, a blue desert with smooth waves. This splendid land is called Burqa, the land that lost its beauty and power when it became a slave of strict minds. It then changed form to a blue cloud thrown over the sun, taking its warmth, hiding its presence, suffocating the air, killing the nature of beauty, confining it for selfishness.
Manasra, thank you for that. I appreciate you taking the time to read it for us. But Manasra is a wonderful filmmaker. I've looked at your films as well before we started this conversation. They're amazing. Digital curator for this issue. Is a digital curator, but for this issue, she was the curator of note. And I want to thank you so much for being, I know you have to run for a shoot, but thank you so much for being part of this conversation today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And so we'll continue with our other three guests here, Grace Ali, Maria Moxie, and Aaron Haney. And I you know, that poem, to me, Grace, in a lot of ways, spoke to all the kind of contradictions, the beauty of it and the question of it. I mean, I think that's why I wanted her to read it. I thought it was just a very profound piece.
No, I'm glad you did. I'm glad. And, you know, it's important, again, to go back to why the issue chose these women artists. It's because each and every one of them either grew up with the burqa, their mothers have worn a burqa, their sisters, they themselves have experimented with the burqa. And it's so important that the women in this issue can speak very personally and intimately about this experience of wearing the burqa, as well as in their art. And so I'm really happy that you asked her to read that.
Yeah, I could wish we could do a whole show just reading the poems that come out of this issue. I think that they're...
It's a beautiful poem, indeed.
Absolutely. And Aaron, I'm just curious, just before we turn back to Mariam, just what you learned in the process of this. I mean, this is something probably, this is not your world. Your world has been doing all this other kind of art curating and the work in Africa with women in photography. What came out of this for you?
You know, it actually connected up a lot of important dots for me because I've done a lot of work with artists, you know, in West Africa and East Africa. And one of them is a dear friend who left Nigeria and now teaches art and photography in Saudi Arabia, which is having, you know, the first elections tomorrow for women.
That's right.
That include women, or at least in theory. And, in conversation with her, in conversation with her students, you know, with a lot of my friends in Egypt, a lot of my friends in London of North African, West African, Middle Eastern descent, you know, there was always that underlying sort of conversation about individual choice. And I think I always kind of took that for granted, that it was a matter of individual choice. So being able to speak with people like Mariam and others who, for whom it wasn't a choice, and that conversation of what happens when you leave a certain area and what's expected of you, depending on several factors, where you live, you know, in relation to the city, how far you might have to travel, how much you might be able to insulate yourself from the public, or, you know, if you have a long commute or something like that. You know, Mariam has suggested really beautifully, I think, in this piece that, you know, there are ways of sort of insulating oneself from this, but in many places it certainly isn't an option. And so being able to sort of get a larger sense of for how many people it wasn't an option, you know, is really important. And it's really interesting, especially through the political lens of what's going on right now in the world. And I guess I just feel like everything is coming a little bit more into relief as people get, it seems like, and are depicted more in this very polarized way, that there's either, you know, a strong adherence to a sense of tradition, a sense of religion, or a sense of sort of, you know, the question of having a society that embraces religious plurality and embraces the idea of individual choice, right? And it just seems like there aren't those two poles. That's not the only place where people live. A lot of people are living right in the middle of that, and they're negotiating and sort of navigating those choices daily throughout their lives. So, I mean, I feel like a lot of these, you know, in conversation with Mariam and in conversation with and reading a lot of the, you know, the interviews and the artists, you know, the artists' work, you can really get a sense of that. There are people that are challenging it. They're challenging the notion of tradition. And of course, you know, they're interpreting that for their own sake, their own selves. I feel like they're creators of new ways of you know, of showing themselves to the world and, you know, and contesting that. So I feel like, you know, it's been really a privilege to be able to be part of that conversation.
No, I find it amazing. I just keep thinking about what all of you must have wrestled with as you put this issue together.
May I just add something here?
Grace, go ahead, please.
You know, I was thinking about how right after the Paris attacks, we also saw quite a bit of Islamophobic sentiments in Ontario. I don't know if you are up to date with Canadian news that much, but a woman in a hijab was kicked and punched outside of her school while picking her kids up. Two women at a subway station in hijabs were pushed. Racial slurs were thrown at them. A mosque in Peterborough was burnt down. But, you know, coming to the concept of the other and othering, Sikhs with turbans get mistaken for Muslims all the time and get attacked, and their temples get attacked too, as we have seen in Ontario. As much as my heart goes out to every victim, whether Muslim, Sikh, ethnic minorities, people of color, I'm also wondering if at some level we're failing the individuals who are the perpetrators behind these vile, vicious, and xenophobic attacks. I mean, is the education system failing them at some point? Are we not talking about multiculturalism, tolerance, and acceptance enough? Do we just, you know, they see someone that dresses differently, looks differently, and that gives them the right to attack? And how do we prevent these kind of phobic attacks from happening in the future? I mean, I'm very invested in Canada as a permanent resident who's going to become a citizen. So, you know, for me, it's important to talk about these subjects as well.
Yeah, Grace, I just pick up on that a little bit. I mean, I think that's, and you can see it in some of the art and in some of what the women have been writing. I mean, because there's this deep sense, I think, in most cultures, but I can talk, we can talk for the West here, of the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, to Miriam's question, are we failing these men and women that are, you know, that are believers in their modesty and that choose to wear these garments in their own personal ways? Yeah, absolutely, we're failing them. We fail them over and over again. There's a hashtag gaining momentum now on Twitter called Ban the Burqa. Ban the Burqa. And it started gaining momentum in the United States after San Bernardino. And the defense of this Ban the Burqa movement is to count the number of European countries that have now outlawed the burqa, Switzerland being the latest. We know about France. We've seen the headlines, as Miriam just talked about. Canada threw the burqa into its election. Mm-hmm. And the burqa became this highly contested ploy in Canada's election. We are failing the folks that wear it because the politics are so invested in this thing that we've lost sight of the people that are actually wearing it. So our conversations become so highly politicized and vitriolic, and no one's actually asking or paying attention to the walk, these people's journeys and their experiences, and why they're donning the burqa, why they're donning a turban. And, you know, my question, my added question to Miriam's question of are we failing our citizens is, if it's not the burqa today, or if it is the burqa today, what will it be tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
Right? What other garment is going to become this highly controversial, vitriolic symbol of hatred? Because if this is how we approach the burqa, or the hijab, or the niqab, I can only imagine what will be next.
You know, I think that's a very powerful point. I mean, I think that you know, when we saw the kind of the vitriolic attacks that's happening in this country, as well as in Canada, but this country with through Donald Trump and on the tens of millions of people who support Donald Trump, it's reminiscent of almost any place on the planet you can mention when people want to attack another racial, another ethnic group, whether it's the Jews in Europe. I mean, whatever that – you can name a dozen where that happened. And I think that that's something we really do have to wake up to. And I think that's one of the things about this issue, Grace, for me, is that you challenge this. But you challenge it in a way – I think – it's really important, I think, here before we lose time, is to talk about the power of approaching this through the lens of artists, through the lens of writers, through the lens of filmmakers, people whose life is about trying to interpret things for us in its most difficult way. I mean, that's part of what you're putting out here for us.
Yeah, you know, I also had conversations with Erin about this. You know, I turn to her a lot. She's the art historian brainiac on the in the team.
You need that.
Great,
you need
one
that.
Of that.
Gotta have that.
Thank you.
No, I have. I've learned a lot from her, and I think she can also jump in and
please do. Yes,
too.
That'd be great.
But I do wrestle with that, Mark, and Mary and Erin will defend her point of view. But I wonder if were we doing a brave thing here by using lens as the inroad, by using art as the inroads into this issue, or were we actually covering our asses and being safe?
Erin, why don't you start?
I don't know.
It's a good question. You know, the thing is, when we're thinking about any kind of creative expression across a cultural line, across a geographic line, I think for many people, there needs to be conversation. It sparks a conversation. And if you're only having it between your eyes and the image or the film or the book or whatever it is, it can be really powerful, but it can also be a bit of an echo chamber. And I think that's why venues and sort of platforms like this are really, really important, because you have the multiplicity of projects, you know, that are, you know, focused, but you have all of these voices and writings and different things that come out of it. And, you know, we never know precisely what an artist's intention is. And so to be able to draw them out a little bit about that is fantastic. You really get a sense of the personal and the generational and the family, you know, I think that comes out in a lot of this, you know, people's concerns for what happened, you know, the stories of their mothers and fathers and grandmothers, and what they hope for their children. And I just think this is something that people in the U.S. and in Canada and Europe, anybody can sort of connect to this idea of during difficult times, what is it that holds people together and, you know, sort of being able to try and figure out and have a conversation or look at a piece of art that takes you to a different place and a different stance and a different point of view is more important than ever, right? It's really fundamentally important. And I think, I'm speaking to the choir here a little bit, but I really feel strongly that this is what we've got to do. It's massively urgent right now.
Well, you know, I think that Martin Luther King once said that if you don't preach the choir, sometimes I'll forget how to sing.
Nice.
I want to thank all of you. This is an incredible issue. The work you've done,
Mark. Before we go, though, we want to know what your favorite pieces were. Yeah,
my favorite what?
What were your favorite artwork and pieces? What was your favorite of the issue?
Oh yeah, I have such a hard time with favorites, but let me try. I really do have a hard time with favorites. I mean, not just because you're here, Mariam. I love the work you did. I think that it was just stunning in kind of challenging the burqa in so many different ways, artistically and stylistically, and in alleys and on streets and the silhouettes. They're amazing, and I love those. And I think that some of the pieces I read in here. I mean the stories. The one called The Bittersweetness of Reinventing the Burqa, Manez's poem and the blue burqa. I mean, I can't find a favorite. I'm not good at favorites. It's like, to me, it's like, who's your favorite kid? How can I name which of my daughters is my favorite? I can't. I love them all for different reasons, you know?
They're all beautiful. I think it's also important to acknowledge the bravery of the individuals that have lent themselves to the artwork and the photography.
Mm.
They're from different parts of the world. They have, you know, all kinds of histories, stories, sentimentalities. And it's important to acknowledge them as well, because I think without them, the work wouldn't even exist. So,
amen.
Yes. Yes.
We've had this conversation this last hour about the magazine Of Note, its latest issue, the Burqa issue. Grace Ali, who is the founder and editorial director of Note, is with us. Mariam Moxie is with us the way you just heard her voice. A photographer who does amazing work in this issue of Note. Aaron Haney, a writer and art historian, who wrote the piece on Mariam Moxie and her work. And earlier in the program, we also were joined by Banaz Razeh, who is the curator for this issue as well, and more. And thank you all so much. And Grace, I really appreciate what you bring to us. So thank you so much for doing it once again.
I thank you for your bravery, Mark, in having us on the show. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for giving our voices a platform, Mark.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much, Mark. Take care.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To podcast The Mark Steiner Show and share it with your friends, visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.